Hey, welcome to the River Podcast, a River podcast hosted by Zach Collier, Priscilla Macy, me, Eric Weiseth. And this week we have a returning guest, Aaron Lieberman, the executive director of the Idaho Operating Guides Association. Our main topic this week, well, we've got a couple and we'll get to those, but we always like to start with news of the week. So Zach, Priscilla, Aaron, what do you got?
Well, I think we have a bunch of stuff. I want to start with almost less news and more hate mail that I received through my Instagram messages.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So I don't usually check my Instagram mail, but I checked it and I got a request, and it starts with, "I'm disappointed in your abuse of platform." And it's basically a long missive that we shouldn't talk negatively about any gear. In a couple episodes, I think last episode or two episodes ago, I, in Gear of the Week, said something bad about some gear that I feel like has fallen apart for me in the past. And so he goes on about how, like, we should only, as podcast hosts, talk positively about gear or not at all. And I wanted to get your guys' thoughts. I don't want to bring up the company again because this just would provide more shade for them. But as podcasters, do we have a platform that we have to be respectful of? Or should we be direct and honest? Or should we only say positive things about gear and not negative things? Do you guys have any thoughts about that?
Can I ask a question before I give my – was this person a representative or employee of said company that you
maybe
talked about?
Maybe, because basically soon after this, the said company became a Instagram message to me as well and then sent me a nicer note, a more polite note. So I think he's somehow associated with that.
Well, I will say that, I made some comment about that company, I don't know, like last spring, about some of their that I really liked, and I didn't get a damn note from them. So I tossed that out there, positive or negative. I think that if you don't want to make equipment, like if you don't want us to talk negatively about your equipment, make equipment we won't talk negatively about.
Yeah.
You know, like, so, don't get me wrong, we should be fair, and we're giving our one person opinion, and take it or leave it. Like, this is my experience with this product. Maybe it wasn't so great. Mm-hmm. Like, they can call me, we can talk about how to fix it, or they cannot. And, you know, that's on them, whatever.
Yeah.
And not like we have a big platform, all like 10 people to listen to this. Come on.
In my experience,
one of the 10 is sorry, Priscilla. I'm curious what you think.
I was going to say, in my experience, companies that I've given, I would say, deliberate feedback, like just saying, you know, this is how you could improve, or like, I didn't like this or that about it. And then a lot of the time they're happy and they're like, well, we can't really improve that, but, you know, if there's an opportunity to, we will. And then companies that don't want to hear any feedback, I don't know, that seems really weird to me, because why would you not want to improve your product so that you're more competitive, as long as it's not just like saying, you know, I didn't like the color of your thing and that's why it sucks, you know.
Yeah. So I mean, I look at the message, he even wrote, "Your call out was petty." And
what were you calling out?
There was some I have several
too much.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I have several items that have broken over multiple years. And I was just pointing out that I don't feel like the quality is up to snuff with the things. But I guess, do you guys feel like we have a responsibility to be always positive? Or if something really is bothering us, that it's okay to say that? Or should we, or is it that abusing the platform by saying something negative about a piece of equipment? Because I generally don't know. Like, I feel bad. I mean, this guy seems obviously upset. Should we just focus on being positive all the time?
You should feel complimented that they thought your platform was like significant enough to bring it up in the first place. And I mean, that's kind of says good things. And then to the question you're asking, which is about principle, like, are we bound to a principle of behavior here? Definitely not. Like, that's the terror and reality of the modern world and the internet.
Free speech, like, man.
Yeah, I mean, if you were writing like a technical document about the structural integrity of X paddle versus Y paddle, and you had data, but you just maligned that data, then yeah, that'd be a fair complaint, but that's definitely not what this is.
Yeah. I also think so, like on the consumer side, like if you're someone that doesn't have a ton of money to spend on gear, I feel like a social responsibility is to let people know when stuff doesn't work that well. Cause I mean, that could have a lot of different adverse outcomes for the person buying it. Maybe they saved up all their money to buy whatever product it is, and then it didn't work out or it was unsafe. So,
you guys should invite them on the show and be like, hey, I'm going to give you 10 minutes to explain to me why I shouldn't be critical of the thing, of the equipment, of the equipment that I was critical of versus other equipment that is the same that I find to be better. Like, explain to me why this is wrong.
Maybe, like, Zach, I think there is a point here that perhaps, like, I'm going to not talk, like, I'm going to talk negatively about bad equipment. If you make bad equipment and it sucks, and I buy it, use it, it breaks, or it doesn't live up to what you advertise it to, or whatever, like, I'm going to have no qualms about telling people it's bad because it's like a public service.
I agree when it's just us talking offline, but as a podcast, maybe we have a different responsibility.
No, well, so, but I think where we do probably have some responsibility, and maybe we should think about this, is to talk about a brand overall, or like, hey, you know, like this, like I bought a bunch of products from these guys, haven't maybe lasted as long as I hoped they would, or something like that. A really generic comment. Maybe there is some space for us to be a bit more cautious about that versus like specific critique or feedback on a specific product.
Yeah.
You know, like for me to make some disparaging comment about NRS as a whole doesn't really do anybody any good. I wouldn't do that anyway. I love those guys. But
unless it's like Sea Eagle.
unless it's like Sea Eagle. But it's not terribly helpful, whereas I can say like, hey, I bought this specific product and it blew out the first time I used it, or it didn't work very good. I think that, you know, they could fix it or they couldn't fix it. Either way, it sucks, I'll buy it. Like, that is helpful to everybody and kind of constructive, whereas generally bashing on a brand is probably less constructive. So
I would, you're saying my mistake would be to
legitimacy in their thing at the same time. Like, we're here to, you know, give our opinion, take it or leave it.
Yeah. I think that's why a lot of people like podcasts in that platform. And as long as you're thinking about it, like what Eric was saying, is don't just say a company sucks because you had one bad experience. And then, you know, hopefully it's an opportunity for them to improve. I know with like immersion research, there was a dry suit that had some problems, and I just gave them feedback, not on podcast or anything, but
now
they improved it, and now it's a much better product. So I think there's definitely value to it, and I wouldn't want to just be one-sided about anything.
Yeah, I mean, in this case for me, it was a pattern of multiple different products breaking where I'm just kind of frustrated. And when we do Gear of the Week, I look around my garage sometimes, like, what do I have to review it? I'm like, oh, I have a stack of broken stuff over there, like maybe I should bring that up. But what I'm hearing from you guys is it's okay for us, like maybe it's not an abusive platform to, we can be negative about things, but we should focus on the individual piece of gear, not a brand as a whole. And my mistake was just saying a brand, I'm having issues with the brand as a whole, and I should have pointed out the specific items of gear in that review. Does that sound right?
I think that's fair. I think as long as it's not like, in the case of customer service, when it's like multiple incidences with different people, I would then say that is like a place where it reflects more on the brand. But when you're talking about gear, I definitely think, especially in the outdoor industry, you shouldn't just say this company sucks because you had one bad experience, because, you know, maybe it's just a product they need to improve a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I actually want to go on one of my little missives. I feel like gear should companies make gear that's like, I wouldn't say cheaply made, but like made in China or made at a low quality. And if you break it, they instantly replace it. And people think that's amazing customer service. Like, I can't believe they just like, I broke it and they sent me a new one. To me, that's terrible because I was in the field, this piece of equipment I depend on broke. I didn't have it. Then I had to come home, contact them, then I had to mail it back to them and wait for a new one and unbox it, throw away the trash. To me, like, getting a new one is annoying. I'd rather the first one just work to begin with. And the business model of these companies making equipment that is just like, we'll just send people a new one and they break, is really frustrating to me. Not only from like, it's my time and energy with all the things breaking, but also it's not very environmentally friendly. There's just so much waste. I'd rather work with companies that make things well to begin with that I'll pay more for that I know will last a long time.
Yeah.
That's where I work hard to do that. And so a lot of companies portray themselves that way, like, cause their stuff costs more, but when it breaks, it's very frustrating to me. Like, when I know I'm buying something that's irreplaceable, I know it. But when it's a high-end brand, I get very frustrated. That's end of my rant, my missive. I'm trying to rebrand my rants as missives.
The one piece I would give is that you should leave some space for just like shit happens. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I brought up this story before, but like, I bought a bunch of Big Agnes, you know, they're like super lightweight foldy chairs. And the interior cord, like the bungee cord, broke like the first time I used one of them. But I sent it back, like it was really quick and easy. And they sent me a new one, and I've used it now for 6 months all the time and had zero problems.
Yeah.
So like, there's
guys, I gotta tell you, I really do love the contours that this conversation took on. It's like, should we talk crap about gear? Like, should we call out people in particular? It's like, oh, maybe we need to think about whether or not we do that. Followed like immediately by, you know, like, I never brought it up in public, but I'm going to do so now with immersion research. Like, just go down the list of all of the brands. And you know what? I'm going to go.
We haven't gone down the list. Mentioned NRS.
Did
we?
We did. Yeah. I'm going to describe, like, you guys answered this question for yourself, but in a really like indirect way, which is to say, you're definitely going to talk crap about certain brands or gear, and like, that is going to happen. Might as well just lean into it.
I know, but I feel like maybe we have a responsibility to only be positive.
No, I disagree.
Okay, that's what I want to know. Do we, like,
we have a responsibility as people, to be honest?
Yeah.
If we want to be, but let's say I want to be a good person. And I want to be respectful of the platform that we have. Don't laugh.
It's overrated.
Jeez, that hurts. I want to be like a nice person who's respectful, mm-hmm. and like is responsible with this platform that we have. What's the right thing to do?
We all want things. Sometimes some of us want to understand what the word missive means. some of us want to be nice. And sometimes those things just aren't going to happen, regardless of how badly we want them.
Okay.
Should we move on?
Let's move on.
Yeah. All right.
Who has news of the week? That was a long news of the week. I'm sorry. That was kind of news. It was just.
Was that the only hate mail?
So far.
I thought there was going to be more hate mail.
It's the same person with multiple messages, but I summed it up with a couple sentences.
All right.
I was going to say, I've talked about lots of companies who's had stuff I didn't like, and I haven't gotten any messages. So. Just feeling a little left out here, guys.
Maybe you hear that we try to do something negative this week, and we'll do a test to see if you can get some hate mail too.
Ooh, there we go.
It's not hate mail; it's hate Instagram messages. Is actually what it was. A hate Instagram message. If people have future hate mails, please send them to questions@rivertalkpodcast.com, so everybody can see them, not just my personal Instagram messages.
unless you Zach's the one that really offended you, and then definitely send it straight to him and only to him. Aaron, you mentioned something about the Whitewater Park in Salmon, Idaho. You want to let people in on that?
Yep. So there is, it looks like the salmon. So for folks from Idaho, specifically around salmon, so not a ton of you, there's been a push to get a Whitewater Park put in. They're just in town for quite a while. It's been on again, off again, will they, won't they, for a while. And it's on track to break ground fall 2021. Right now, there's somebody in the community who's doing a 4, and the same local community is doing a 4-to-1 match. So if you like Whitewater Parks in concept or actually live in the area and might use it, you can Venmo @SalmonWhitewaterPark or go to salmonwhitewaterpark.org to support that. I think it'd be pretty cool. I mean, I'm terrible at play boating, but I could go there and pretend.
You'd get better.
Yeah, well, I could go there once and I could talk about it for a couple of years how I went there.
It's pretty awesome. Cool. Great thing for, you know, a super rural Idaho community to be invested in. Great to see. And I know they've been working on that for a long, like, I feel like that's been a thing that's been pushed by locals there for a long, long time. Kind of neat to see it coming along.
Yeah.
Zach, did you have something about a life jacket company?
Yeah. Do you guys know the MTI life jackets? I don't know if you guys ever used them. They make PFDs for whitewater paddlers and recreational paddlers. They just got bought like a few months ago, actually. It's kind of old news. But Wing, the company that makes Wing rafts, has been buying up companies. And they recently bought up MTI. So, which I know I've talked to them a little bit. They're going to basically, you know, revamp the line. And Wing also bought Mustang Survival, which I may have talked about before. They're a Canadian-based company that makes – they're like Cocotat of Canada. That's a very quick way to describe them. They make really high-quality stuff. We don't have much of it in the U.S., but Wing bought Mustang as well. So bringing together the R&D and the experience of Mustang with MTI – I bet we'll see some pretty cool stuff coming out of them in the coming years.
I thought you were going to comment on MTI as a manufacturer before being bought by Wing. I like your Mustang Survival splash jacket top that I see in the back there.
The one I'm supposed to send you in a large. That one's the extra large.
I totally forgot about that. That was gonna happen.
That's a separate story that we don't need to get into right now.
Yeah.
And oh, go ahead, Aaron.
But I was gonna say, Aaron, any sort of immediate IOJ, Idaho Outfitter and Guide Association news of the week that would be relevant to any of our paddlers or potentially Idaho guides out there?
Nothing huge. So there's anecdotally sounds like use across the board and mostly the private end was that there have been more sort of outside control season launches on like main, middle, some of those more frequented multi-days in Idaho. Using the payette was definitely up, which is interesting. And again, it's hard to differentiate between the commercial and non-commercial use that contributed to it, but overall seems like paddling is going pretty strong in Idaho during the age of COVID. Otherwise there's some news and updates on the fish front. The numbers are still bad. Salmon and steelhead numbers, they're still going down. And the governor's work group is closing up here this December, and hopefully we can keep some momentum behind it. Other than that, I don't think there's anything really too specific to the riverside. If there is, and I'm not bringing it up, then Zach will probably let me know.
I have no idea what's happening. Great. I'm way out of the loop.
I mean, there's stuff in the weeds, but no, nothing else big.
Yeah.
Or am I missing something, guys? What am I forgetting?
I don't think so.
Don't ask us. This is you. This is your world.
Yeah.
I do think that, you know, it's worth mentioning that, you know, with the pandemic going on, you know, boating was the activity of choice, it seemed like, this year. Use numbers, you know, anecdotally, what we've looked at in Idaho looks like they're probably up, you know, for both the non-commercial side, for sure. And we saw that in Oregon as well. I think the weekend before permit season in Oregon on the Rogue, and even after permit season, was pretty busy. But the one before permit season was possibly the busiest we've ever seen. Use numbers, I haven't received the final use numbers or anything, but anecdotally looking at what we saw, I'm assuming by casually watching that use numbers there from the private community or non-guided community will be way up this year. So interesting.
Was it the same?
I mean, it makes sense. It was the choice, activity of choice this year. Makes sense.
Yeah.
So Zach, Eric, Priscilla, was it the same over on the Rogue where one of the trends was like more launches overall? Proportionately, but smaller groups across the board. Was that the same in Oregon?
It seemed like
I haven't seen the hard numbers, but Rogue numbers generally tend to be small groups. Zach, you can speak to this. You do more of that number crunching than I do, but from my memory, most years, the average group size on the Rogue is like four people.
Let me tell you the interesting things about the Rogue. The average group size historically has been six, and it's been trending down. It's like 5.8. So it's been trending down like 0.01 or 0.02 a year. So its average is six, but it's like 5.8 now. And who knows, this year could be an anomaly. Who knows what it is. But the most interesting fact about the Rogue is that the most common group size. So even though the average group size is six, what do you guys think the most common group size is by number of groups?
Two.
Yeah, it's two. So there's more two-person groups than any other group size out there by a significant amount. If I remember right, it goes two and then three and then one and then four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten.
Yeah.
Was that a logical inference, Eric, or was that just a really good guess?
Well, I think it probably had hit in my brain somewhere, but it also, you know, the way math works, if the average
guess.
I bring it up in outfit meetings a lot. Okay. I'm sure Eric couldn't bring it up before.
The way that math works, and we have an engineer here, but I'm pretty sure we're talking about the mode, not the average. Right.
Well, the BLM, when they give us the data, says average next to it, but it could be the mode.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, if the BLM says. Up the report. Yeah.
Or is it the median? Is it the median, the mode, or the average?
Probably, I think it's the mode. It's what number in the sequence is most frequent.
You are correct.
We are quickly going off the rails here, guys. If I was driving listening to this podcast, I'd probably be trying to crash my car right now.
This whole podcast
has been a
weird tangents. You want to move on?
Yeah, let's move on.
Yeah, I think you meant weird misses, Zach, but go on.
That's more of an oration. Nice. So I'd like to I think we may have some different topics, but I think I'd like to talk about the Canyon Creek incident that happened last week. And for listeners that do or don't know, there was a fatality of a kayaker, a very good kayaker, on Canyon Creek, and there's a report we'll put on the website that was done by somebody there that is, I mean, I try to always read these and learn what I can from them the best I can. They're sometimes hard to read. This one's hard to read.
An accident report where you'd find it is on American Whitewater. They keep a database of accidents, and there's a lot of hard reads and lessons in there, but just wanted to let folks know where you were looking to find that.
Yeah, so when I first saw it, somebody posted it on Facebook, and then when I went to go find it, I went to American Whitewater's website, and then clicked on accidents, or there's a link that's obviously for accident reports, and I just searched most recent. And it's actually the second most recent fatality. It looks like a canoer died since then, which is, not good to hear. But for me, I always like to look at these incidents and then look at like lessons learned. And the gentleman who wrote the article was really nice to write a section called Acknowledge Mistakes and Lessons. And I think it'd be fun for us to go through those. I guess fun is the wrong word, but like informative to go through those. Yeah. And just so we can talk about things. I have some questions about things, and hopefully listeners can benefit from this too. Things that they learned. And just in short, they did Canyon Creek at high water. Somebody swam and they had to handle and got caught in a hydraulic. That's the quick here thing. And I just want to go through these lessons and see what you guys think. The first one he said is to have a PLB, which is I think that's just like code for personal locator beacon. Mm-hmm. They didn't have one with them, but what was that?
So a spot device would be an exchange.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. Is spot or like those Garmin things?
Yeah.
Garmin owns spot now.
Whoa, that's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, really? So it's basically a device where you press a button. It knows your GPS location. It sends it to emergency services who will typically get a helicopter there or something there very, very quickly. It's if you have a serious injury or fatality, it's the quickest way to get emergency services there. Mm-hmm. And he says that every paddler should have one on their person. What do you guys think about that? Do you think that every paddler should have one on their person? And what does that mean, on your person, in your PFD or just like in your kayak somewhere?
I think the rule of thumb, and I don't know if this is correct or not, but what we've done is one person have it in your group. If it's not a roadside run, you don't have cell phone service, obviously think critically about the scenario. We didn't have one for a very long time, but now that we do, it just kind of always stays in Jacob's safety first aid emergency kit that lives in his kayak. And sometimes we have two on a trip. If two people have one, there's no point in not bringing them if you have them. But I think one per group is a good starting rule. And then depending on the situation and the location and the, you know, the hazards and difficulty of the run, then maybe you change that rule and just think about what's appropriate.
Would you feel like you needed one if you were roadside class three?
I don't think so. I don't think that would come to my mind when I'm packing for a roadside class three trip. But again, I think it would depend, like, is it roadside in the middle of nowhere? Like, is anyone going to be on that road? Is there cell phone service? What's the ability level of your group? Is there someone with a health condition? Like, all those things would be variables that would weigh on my decision.
So maybe a real life example, yeah, though, of that is, you know, it's sort of a cost benefit analysis, right? Of what does it cost me to carry this thing and take it with me? Basically nothing. It takes up, if you have the mini like I have, it's, you know, it's smaller than my cell phone. It's probably half the size of my cell phone. It takes up zero space to just toss it in. And even on a road, like specifically a roadside class three run, Aaron and I were on one last year, and we were just upstream from where it happened, but there was a car, you know, went off the road and had an accident, like basically right at the river's edge. We're in no cell phone range. We're out in the middle of kind of, you know, quasi nowhere. But like, if we paddled across that, we wouldn't be able to do very much if we didn't have the ability to communicate. But if we have the ability to communicate, like, we can all of a sudden be really helpful in that scenario. Because, you know, if sometimes the things you'll come across aren't the things in your group. Like, I've been in river scenarios where I came across another group who was having a, you know, very significant scenario, like situation. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, regardless of the quality run or the likelihood that your group's going to have the issue, if you have the ability to take one of these things, like, you should. Like, yeah. This story to read, like, I think one thing I want to preface to anything I say here is, like, one, this is a tragic, like, tragic thing to read. This was really hard to read. It's, like, super sad. It's a great example. The way that he writes and the honesty he writes about it with is a wonderful example of, he did a real service to the community, because it paints a story of, you know, the kinds of decisions that most of us have made at different points. And, you know, a reminder that this is an inherently dangerous activity. And, you know, decisions that you think that are reasonable decisions based on your skill level and everything else can turn tragic really fast. And I'm not going to say anything. I wouldn't say anything negative about any of the things that they did or whatever. But, you know, as we're reading through these things and he brings this up as a thing to think about, I would echo his advice that if you have one of these, you should take it. Like, I take mine everywhere. Part is I live in an area with shitty cell phone service. Like, I drive 5 miles from my house and I lose cell phone service. So I literally take mine with me everywhere. It is in my car. It's how I communicate. I use it all the time just to send texts to my family or to be able to receive things from work if I'm out, you know, doing whatever. Mm-hmm. But like, I throw mine in. If I go kayaking, doesn't matter what the run is, I take it. Unless I have cell phone service the whole time, I'm going to toss this in just because why not? As far as what I carry in my life jacket, the new ones come, and I can't remember the waterproof rating on these, but it's like that 15 feet for 10 minutes rating. So they're pretty waterproof. So I sometimes will throw mine in my life jacket. It kind of depends on the run. A lot of the time, like if I'm raft guiding or if I'm rafting or if I'm in my drift boat or whatever, I usually will just toss it in my life jacket. But if I'm in my kayak, sometimes I'll throw it in my life jacket pocket. Sometimes I'll throw it in my lap bag. But I have mine all the time.
And I think something about this goes along the lines with any sort of tool you bring on the river. Like if you have a throw bag, know how to use it, take care of it, that sort of thing. I think with the spot devices, we had one of ours go bad because we kept it in the water a bit and didn't really think about it too much. And then when we went to make sure it turned on and everything before a trip, it didn't work. So I think making sure that, you know, before you take the tool, make sure it does work so you're not relying on a tool that is faulty. So just do a quick little battery test before you bring it, or often enough, especially if you're keeping it in your life jacket a lot. And I like the point that Eric brought up about it always being in your car too. That was something that I just thought, I also do that, especially if I'm driving somewhere by myself, kind of through areas where there's not going to be service or more remote areas. It's definitely something that gives me a little peace of mind, not only for myself, but also, like Eric was saying, you never know when you're going to come across something and you might be able to help someone in a really bad scenario.
I mean, do you guys think they're not, I mean, Eric, you said they're not, they're easy to get or they're not expensive, but the mini's $250 and you have to pay a monthly fee.
There is a cost, yeah, for sure. I think that's,
yeah, so not, it's not,
I
free.
Say they're not, I
it's
wouldn't not say they're not like
inconsequential.
They're expensive. Like, yeah, it's, but the value is there to me.
Yeah.
I have one too.
But I'm also professional in this like outdoor industry. So it, you know, like the benefit to me is different than it probably is to the weekend recreationalist. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Definitely.
That's where I want to get at. Like, I have one too. I, you know, if I go to the Lower Hood, which is kind of roadside, not really, I don't bring it. But I'm rethinking that now, that maybe I should, after reading this incident report, you know, because something could happen and having it with you would be critical. It's not that hard to throw in. So, you know, I'd probably be better bringing mine. But, you know, he writes in here, every paddler should have one on their person. And I feel like we should listen to this advice. I mean, I think that it's very fresh in his brain. I think it's good to think about. Is this something we should start, you know, saying like, hey, if you're a kayaker, this is part of your gear. You get a kayak, you get a skirt, you get a helmet, you get a paddle, you get a personal locator beacon. Or if you're a rafter, you buy a raft, you buy a frame, you buy oars. It's like a thing that every boater, is this something we should maybe be talking about more? Like, every boater should just have one. That should, it become, should become a standard thing.
I think what? I think with that statement, there's got to be a responsibility to educate people about them and how to use them and when it's appropriate, because we've seen when these devices first came out, public mass distribution, there was this huge spike in calls to search and rescue that cost a lot of money, not only for the users, but also for the people responding, because there was a lack of education about, well, when is it appropriate to use this tool? So if we're going to advocate to the masses that everyone should have one, there's got to be a meaningful dialogue about education too.
Yeah, I think though, Priscilla, one thing I would add, I mean, there are, so like the mini that I have is about $300 or something, but it pairs with my cell phone. You can text with it. So like I use it for that kind of stuff all the time, just to be able to text out of cell phone range. Mm-hmm. You know, the original devices, it was basically, all it was you push the button and somebody comes to help you. You don't know when they're going to come, you don't know what they're going to come with. They don't know what they're coming into, like all that kind of stuff. I think they still sell some of those devices where it's like, what it is a push button for help. But yeah, a lot of them now, most of them, from my understanding, will pair with your phone or have the capacity to type right on them. And from my experience, when someone hits the SOS button, the place that it goes, they respond to you with, hey, what's going on? What do you need? How can we help? So they have more of an ability to get an understanding now than they used to in what's going on the scene. So that, you know, some of those issues of even false alarms or overreactions or whatever, I think there's a lot less of that now because they actually have the ability to communicate with you in the field and figure out what's going on.
So
yeah, I mean, I've been involved.
Zach, to your question, ahead, I'd say one, like the context. So we're asking a question of principle to be applied globally based on something written in context. And it is a broad statement, but I'd say, like, you know, the point of this like reflection wasn't to categorize and quantify like when, where, how to have these things. I think the overall thrust is just where possible have this, and like, and as a rule have this. And I think like we went to questions of like class 3 roadside in cell service versus not, and there are going to be any number of different like qualifications that change that calculus. Like if I'm going paddling with Eric, who has one on him, do I need to bring mine too? Like if, and all these different things, and there are arguments for either side. We can go down, I think anybody could go down that ad infinitum. I'd say it's probably safe to say, like, as a rule, if you can, if you like can financially and otherwise, it's a good idea to have one. And that if, and I think that that will also sit to your question of like, you know, should we start talking about that, about this in these terms? I think that will become, I think the answer will be yes, pretty shortly. So, I mean, I, you know, not to get too off topic, but what Elon Musk is launching, like satellites that'll bring, for better and worse, like connectivity in remote areas for anybody on their cell phone. When we, as like, as those things become more accessible, where really you're not, you don't have to be a professional who can write this off or who uses it for their business or who just goes every single day to be able to justify the expense. But this is something that you just have on you, and it's a matter of like proper planning versus cost benefit in literal terms. So like, as a rule, it makes a lot of sense. Like everybody who finds themselves in that situation, I think would say either they're glad they did or they wish they did.
Yeah. I know for me, like the one I have is kind of a big Garmin one. It's one of these for our trips. Based on this, I'm going to buy a mini and have it with me. Like a little kid, I always bring kayak, you know, like that's, I've, based on this, I'm doing that. And that's why I want to get you guys thought about it. Even on the class three, I think there's times when we could use it, but let's move on to the next one. Medical experience. He says, I have first aid training, but nothing beyond the basics. He was comfortable giving CPR, but lacked the composure to remember count compressions. Thomas, somebody with them, knew far more and was able to take the lead. And he writes, every paddler should have woofer or something similar as a minimum. Now, woofer is like a 40-hour course or 80-hour course. I agree. Like, I want people I paddle with having woofers. But I guess the question is, like, is there a minimum amount of first aid training people should have paddling?
I mean, you should know how to do CPR for sure. Whether that's a formal course or getting instruction from someone who is qualified to, that could be a paddling partner. I think, you know, one of the biggest hazards for water sports is becoming a drowning victim, and having that skill set in your back pocket to where it's not like, a surprise, I guess, is super valuable. I also would say understanding specifically CPR for drowning victims is pretty important. There's, after reading this trip report, Jacob and I had a conversation about it, and we remembered a story of a friend who used the Heimlich on a drowning victim on a paddling trip to clear some of the water out of the lungs, while also doing, you know, compressions and mouth to mouth. And that wasn't something that I ever even thought about. And then I did some reading, and there's actually some medical literature about that potentially being a helpful tool, but, you know, compressions is really the most important part. And, some medical professionals say, you know, though they say mouth to mouth isn't necessary for just resuscitation in general, if it's a drowning victim, sometimes the mouth to mouth kind of helping to clear the airway can help clear out some liquid. So I'm going to do much more reading about that, because I just realized there's a few aspects that I'd want to know more about if I got in that situation. But I mean, it sounds like they did everything in their power and they had skill sets to do it. And it, again, just want to say it's heartbreaking, and it seems like they really did everything that they could.
I mean, he writes, everybody should have a woofer or something similar as a minimum. Do you guys agree with that? Is that?
I don't think so. Or,
I think it's realistic.
No.
Yeah.
I think the CPR and just basic medical awareness is important, but you know, CPR is definitely something that you should know as a paddler.
Cool. Let's move on from that one. He talks about headlamps, and headlamps, they had one with them, but not enough. And he writes, every paddler should have a waterproof headlamp on their person, especially when day runs are short, runs are long, and/or start times are late. Do you guys carry a headlamp with you guys when you kayak, like a day trip?
Yeah.
I don't. I just, there's one in my lap bag always. Like, if I'm going out and I'm in my creek boat, so I'm carrying a lap bag, like, I have a headlamp.
Yeah, likewise. It's just one of the things that happens to me in there.
Just about hiking out in the dark. Like, I think Priscilla and Aaron probably remember me, like, very pissed off one time when we left after, like, 10 a.m. for a trip in the winter, just because I'm a daylight person. Like, I get pissed off if it's, like, the sun's even low in the sky. It starts to make me uncomfortable.
I do now. I hadn't learned the lesson at that point yet, but I now carry a headlamp in my Watershed Coe bag. Also carry a fire starter, like a butane little lighter, and, you know, if I remember to restock it, some fire starting material, a couple snacks, basic first aid supplies.
So it seems like there should be a kit of stuff that we could carry. I mean, as I read through this, we could have a little kit that has a headlamp, our communication device. I agree, fire starters are big. Like if you get caught out overnight, having a fire is just a huge difference, like massive difference.
And a space blanket, one of those like tinfoil blankets.
Yeah. Like $2. Those things are $2.
And they take up no space.
So small.
A tiny little kit that goes, again, in my little lap bag. I mean, my tiny little bag that sits between my legs that has, you know, fire starter, safe, like those safety blankets. A couple like gel things, you know, has the tool to start a fire and like fire starter stuff. Just cause I think those are, it's, again, it takes up almost no space, almost no weight.
Yeah.
And could be something that is massively helpful in a lot of scenarios.
Something, I don't know where we got this idea. Maybe it was Darren McCoy's website, cause he has a bunch of cool tips about overnighters and kits and whatnot, but our safety kit, we have just a Nalgene water bottle, and we put like all the first aid stuff, like basically the necessaries. Close up the water bottle, that stuff stays watertight even if your dry bag fails, and then have the personal location device in there as well, and then, you know, just random other stuff that doesn't fit in the water bottle. But I think the key to bringing the kit with you all the time is either having it where it's always just that one kit and it never changes, it never leaves your bag, or making it easy, like it's all in a water bottle and I know to grab that water bottle.
I love the water bottle idea. Like, you could almost have the water bottle in the back of your kayak. Like, I have two kayaks, so I don't want to switch it between the two because I'll forget sometimes. But if I have a water bottle with a headlamp, some fire starters, the basic stuff in both of them, I just know that they're always there. I don't have to think about them.
I think back to this guy's point real quick, though, one of the things that like, I carry my little Coe bag, and I always put mine, or almost always, I don't always, but I would say more often than not, I put it on my lap so that if I take a swim, I can grab that bag and swim with it, or, you know, at least make a valid effort to keep it with me. But my boat is going wherever my boat is going.
Is the bag clipped into your boat?
No. It's just,
or if you swim, it's free.
If I swim, it's free. So, like, it's coming, so, you have so to I can grab it as I'm going out.
If you can
like,
grab it.
I at least
it.
Have a chance when it surfaces to grab it or whatever. Huh. It's in my boat. Like, can I lose my boat?
Yeah.
Or my boat gets pinned or whatever. It doesn't do me any good. And the most, like, likely scenario is my boat's pinned somewhere. Like, yeah. As far as, like, why we're stuck somewhere or I lost my boat. To at least have a, you know, a prayer of being able to grab my bag.
Yeah.
Have you ever lost it?
And that may be totally garbage. No, I've never lost it. But I also not swam a whole lot because
I swam one time and the bag floated out and someone in the group was able to grab it. And I think I changed my mind for various reasons, whether I clip it in the back of my boat or if I keep it in my lap or whatnot. And Jacob's usually the one that carries kind of all of the supplies for first aid and whatnot because he's the better paddler. So I think that's also something to consider in a group setting is who's carrying the important gear.
But doesn't it make sense that everybody has this then? You know, because Like if everybody has, yes. It's not that hard to get these things and put them in a bottle and put it in the back of a kayak or whatever. Because you don't want to be, I mean, I can see things like the first aid because that's kind of bulky. Not everybody's going to have a big first aid kit. Mm-hmm. But the basic stuff like a headlamp and a fire starter and maybe a couple of things, everybody could carry that with them.
Definitely. I think the only scenario where you're kind of divvying stuff up is like when you're on, you know, overnight trips, you're definitely saying, you know, one person has the breakdown, one person has the med kit, that sort of thing. But I think you're exactly right. We should all have the basic materials of being able to have light, like a headlamp and fire starter, and that, like that, that's not much extra to anything.
The last thing I want to ask about this is he mentions a waterproof headlamp. I don't even know that existed. Do you guys know anything about waterproof headlamps?
You can get them on Amazon.
Huh. Cool.
I got to go for
most of your headlamps now, like your Black Diamonds and all those, like they're at least like significantly water resistant, if not water, like, they may not work underwater if you turn them on, but most of them are going to be pretty sealed up, I think.
I mean,
because I think that's right.
For me, I'm
maybe wrong. But
put
that
it
was my understanding.
In a dry bag or something, so right, like I don't feel like I'm going to need it to be waterproof. But I feel like he's almost recommending having it under PFD.
I'm not sure.
That's how I read. I mean, this, but I don't know.
Yeah, if you're doing dry bag, and maybe not waterproof necessary, but if you don't not doing dry bag or water bottle or whatever, then you know, need to be waterproof.
Yeah. Well, I think the rest of the advice he had, I think it's, you know, it's basically like don't borrow people's gear, if you're going to paddle a hard run, make sure you're using your kayak and paddle. I think that makes sense until you have to borrow something. Always do that, but maybe that should be certainly a consideration, you know, being in somebody's boat with the wrong outfitting or whatever isn't always a good thing on different runs. And he talks about time, and I'm with you, Eric, man. If people show up, if we're doing a full day run or something, people show up late and they still have to go get lattes and burritos, I'm out. Like, I don't want to deal with the 1 o'clock starts on a run where we barely have enough time to finish.
This is one I think that is really, really important. And I think we've talked about it before, is that, you know, especially if you're kayaking something pretty hard, like there's already gonna be enough stress. There's already gonna be enough challenge. And that's assuming everything goes right. And you just add so many additional factors and risks and potential problems by starting late in the day, like sunlight. And time, like time with sunlight on your side, gives you so many more options to react to so many possible scenarios.
Yep.
Than if it's dark out. Like.
Yep.
So that to me is a really important one in this, is that you influence your decision making. Like, there's so many things that happen when you're pressed for time with daylight that don't happen, or, you know, that can be thought of differently, or the way you look at things is different, all sorts of things. It's just a different scenario when you've got lots of time.
Yeah. And I think it's one of those lessons you kind of learn the hard way. Like you think you're putting on in time and nobody pays attention to time. Next thing you know, you're on the river and it's dark and you look back and like, how did that happen? And then every time after that, you then are super careful. I think it's something hopefully we can talk about, people can maybe pay attention to, but it's a lesson that I feel like, I'm guessing you've learned the hard way too.
I mean, I've been pushed for, are we paddling in the dark? What's it like? How's this going? And then I've made decisions to not scout things or, you know, whatever, because it's like you're pressed for time. Yeah, I've been there and it's not a situation I like being in.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I want to just, I'm glad we talked about this. I want to thank him for writing the story to help us all learn. And the lessons for us to talk about. I'm, you know, taking the time to do it makes me want to take them seriously. And certainly, like, I know I'm going to take some time now. I'm going to order that new beacon. It's like the second I leave a beacon in my truck, but I want to have a beacon that I dedicate to kayaking. I always definitely bring. I'm going to make myself a little kit, put up my kayaks, just to, you know, learn from these and just remind myself of things to work on for future paddling.
Yeah, I want to thank him for writing that. I can't imagine how hard that was. But the service that it did for the kayaking community is like incalculable. It was a real service to put that out there and to be as honest and open about it as he was, because there's lots of lessons to learn. So
yeah,
thanks. Agreed. Thanks Dan for doing that.
Well, you guys want to finish up with gear of the week?
Yeah, gear of the week. Topics? Let's do it.
All right. Why don't you guys go first while I look around my garage? Something. Oh, I got one.
Gear of the week. Oh, go for it. Do it, Zach. Who are you going to bash?
I'm not going to bash. I'm positive. I'm going to go positive. Selway Fabrication makes those cool toilets. You guys probably know they make the riverbank toilet. We use them for our commercial trips. I think they're amazing. But they also, people don't know this, they make one for duckies. And I'm bringing this up because I did a ducky trip with Aaron at the end of August, and he carried it in his kayak the whole time. It's basically a ducky-shaped groover that held 12 people's poop for 3 nights. Aaron and I did some calculations in the hotel. That did the math right? And we tried to figure out the volume of a poop, which is harder than the average volume of a poop, which is harder than you think it is to do, because the way volume is measured in ounces is ounces a measure of weight. Anyway, it's a long story. Anyway, it carries more than you think. So we had 3 nights, 12 people. This one groover handled the poop like a champ. And it's a lesser known product that Selway makes. It's their little kayak shaped groover. Aaron, you carried everything to add?
So I was actually just looking. After we got off that trip, Zach, I went back because I told you I'd done this math before.
Yeah.
I went back and I found where I did that math. And so I just wanted to cross check our calculations with what I had there. Let's see.
I think where you got messed up is ounce. There's ounces as a measure of weight. It's different than ounces as a volume of volume. And I think you did it based on the weight measurement, which well,
you should call Ryan at the BLM on the Rogue, because they have a formula that they use to calculate the cubic inches of space that you need per person per day.
Because that's what we're looking for.
Allow you to launch on the Rogue if you without do not right have volume. Enough volume storage for your human waste.
Man, Ryan's the best. Of course he has that.
So I think that formula may have been there pre-Ryan. Like, I feel like that's been a thing for a while, but I would assume that they have it still. So, and Ryan is the best. I'm not taking away from Ryan's madness.
It's a really cool groover. It doesn't work in a scat machine. So it doesn't fit in a scat machine. You have to clean it manually the old school way. But I highly recommend it, especially if you're doing ducky trips. It fits. It's made to fit in a ducky. It's shaped to fit in the back or an inflatable kayak. It's made to
shape. Yeah, they're cool. We have one. I've always thought it was a neat little product for sort of IK self-support trips.
Yep.
Yeah, I like them.
Okay, I'm not finding. I'll just forward this to you. You can put it in the. You can put the math in the notes or something.
I'll do that.
People want to see that.
My gear of the week is the Red Sides organization in Idaho. It's a guide advocacy and support organization. They're hosting a, I don't know what the hell it is, like a art fair, craft fair or something of like river guide stuff.
Guide made craft fair.
Yeah, there you go. And there's some really cool stuff that's handmade by these Idaho river guides that you should go and check out and support these folks. Because
where do you check it out? I've seen this on Instagram.
Yeah, I found the link. It's on Red Side's Instagram like page is the link to the whole thing, I think.
Okay.
Or there was. But there's stuff on there and you can find the different vendors that they had. Like there's one that makes these really cool leather bound cribbage sets, and there's one that makes spices, and there's there's a bunch of artists, and you can buy paintings and prints and that kind of stuff.
On Instagram there's beautiful art, and I'm like, oh, that'd be cool. I wonder where I buy it. So you're saying there's a website where you can go and buy all this stuff?
Some of the I think individual posts have links to the people who make the stuff. You can go to those individual people's websites. But I think they're also putting together something else. But I could be wrong. Cool. But either way, if you get on their thing, you can go through and find that stuff. But there's some really incredible Idaho guide artists and crafters and entrepreneurs who are doing some really neat stuff to help subsidize their guiding habit. So, go check it out. Small Business Saturday or whatever the hell the not Black Friday is.
I'm in.
It's where you spend a bunch of money on Amazon and then you go buy something for $5 at the local store.
There you go.
So people practice that.
Priscilla, you got your gear?
Priscilla left
a while ago.
She had a meeting.
Oh, fine. Whatevs, bro. Whatevs, dude.
Yeah, I know. I needed time to hedge because Eric, I was gonna shout out about something on that on the guide fair too. I ordered a couple. I haven't gotten them yet, but custom charcuterie boards. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. But special meats, I think, is what you put on.
You lived out of your truck.
Yeah, and trailer.
You have room for a
custom? No, they're not for me. They're not. No, they're not. No, okay. They're not for me, Zach. I wouldn't use that.
I was going to order the grasshopper spices, but my wife said she wouldn't put them on food. But I still think it sounds great. Like, spices high in protein. You throw some salt on your sandwich or whatever and get your protein intake for the day. I think it's awesome. So
I'll give a backup one then. The new IOGA hats. You can't buy them online yet, and they're not advertised. But if you call, then I can probably get you one, whether without pictures in advance.
Wait, hold on. Just so we know, anybody can call and get these hats. Any of our listeners
anybody can call and get these hats.
They won't be able to see what they look like, and they have to make a phone call to buy it. Mm-hmm. So you're making it hard on them. But trust you, they're cool and they're worth the money. Hopefully they're exactly overpriced,
too. Only bad things happen fast. No, I'm selling them. I'm selling them just above cost, including gas. It's like it'll be like $20.
Okay. And why are they cool? Why would we want it?
I mean, this is audio format, so folks can't see. But if you could see the webcam here,
you're wearing.
It'd be pretty self evident. Yeah.
No, it's pretty awesome. My question is, I have a large head, like it's just big. Unfortunately, will that hat fit my head?
Yeah, I think
is,
so.
Is for a, okay.
I think we've actually tested that, Zach. I think it fits on your head.
Oh, it's the same hat that I have.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. So I don't need to buy one.
I mean, you still could.
Okay.
Got it. Awesome.
They're great. They have four letters on them. They have pictures of inlaid pictures of rafting and fishing and shooting and a horse.
Yep. Cool.
Zach, you take a picture of yourself wearing it and post it in the episode notes.
Oh, I can't wait to put photos of myself online. That's one of my favorite pastimes.
Yeah.
I'd love to.
Awesome.
Yeah. Well, should we wrap this bad boy up?
Yeah, do it. So thanks for listening, everybody. Hopefully you're going out paddling. There's water out there now, finally. I know where you are. I guess if you're in Oregon, you're in Idaho, all of our water's frozen, so. Not so much voting on our end, but maybe we're going skiing. Otherwise, we will probably be back next week. So, have fun out there doing voting things. Be safe. Make good choices. All that stuff.
Okay. I'm really awkward. Chattahoochee, Rio Grande, the Allegheny.